All right, so we have a lot to cover today, so we should probably get started. First of all, I want to join in the other CSG leaders in welcoming you to today's meeting, where we will be getting ready for the board meeting, which will occur immediately following this meeting. But we have a couple of other sort of last-minute presentations. And in particular, we'll be hearing from Larry Strickling. So he will be coming in here at 10:25, and we'll have 20 minutes or so to ask him questions. I'm sure that many of you have already had a chance to hear him speak, so I've not asked him to come in and prepare anything. It's really more of a Q&A session. We'll also have an opportunity to hear from the ESSAC, and they'll be joining us at 9:55. We have a little bit of time up at the front to kind of get started. I've got sort of a draft agenda for what we'll be discussing with the board. We already spent a fair amount of time on Sunday going through what the topics would be and what the supporting points would be. We've identified some speakers who might, you know, speak on particular points, but, you know, that was just an idea. Those are recommendations. If you're not comfortable, if you don't want to do it, we have time to make last-minute adjustments. Is there anything else that folks would like to try to do today? We don't have a ton of time, but are there any other issues or topics that we should discuss while we're together today?
Can we just announce the young people from...
So Marilyn would like to make a quick announcement. So
I just want to make a quick announcement. You may have seen on the agenda that on Thursday there will be a mock board meeting, and I want to ask you to welcome four representatives from the youth who will be shadowing the BC today, will be coming with us into the meetings, and then they will be participating in a mock board meeting on Thursday. And the topic that they are addressing is... of ideas. So join us in welcome. Marie Patello and Angie Graves are helping me to, and Chris Chaplow to help Sherpa them around, but do welcome them, and they will be with us through most of the day, the morning and the board meeting, and then in the afternoon they'll be in the BC.
I'll let them put you to work on the newsletter.
Are there any other topics or areas that people would like to discuss before we kind of go through our agenda with the board? It probably makes sense to do, since we've got a larger group today, to do just a quick update in terms of where we're at with the election for board seat number 13. And I think, Marilyn, you wanted to speak on that.
Sure.
But we should do that briefly, and then we should talk about this.
And, of course, this is a public meeting. This is an open meeting, so I'll be providing a very high-level points, feedback points, and then we can talk offline with any more detailed questions. The board seat, just a quick recap, there are two seats that are elected through from the GNSO. The voting is done by the policy councillors. We have six policy councillors, two per constituency. The nomination process is done, and the election process involves votes that have to come from both SGs in our House, the SGs in our House, plus the one nominating committee appointee, and that is Dan Reed this time around. We have, from our side of the House, we have nominated Bill Graham. There is a nominee from the non-commercial stakeholder group, and that is Avery Doria. There's some interest in some parts of that House in another candidate as well, but they have accepted the idea that there would be one candidate. Christina, the CSG executives, Christina in this case, and Tony and myself are trying to meet with the NCSG Executive Committee to agree on a procedure. I did have a few minutes with David Cake last night, and we've agreed that I will send a formal invitation for the three of us to get together with an yet unnamed number of representatives from their executive committee to work on procedure. It could be one person, it could be more. They're deciding. And then we will have to continue to work out how we move forward with the election. The time, the big issue right now is getting agreement on procedures. And the last election we held, we had agreed on a requirement of 60% of the votes across the House, which means that any candidate has to get, even if they get all six votes from one SG, they have to get at least one vote from the other SG and the nominating committee appointee vote, or two votes from the other SG. It is a very challenging situation that we go through with all these elections. It's similar to what we went through with the vice chair election on the council. And I would ask all of you to keep coming back to your executive committee with feedback and with questions, because we are electing a board member for the good of ICANN, even though they are elected from the SG. And they are. It's always a very difficult difficult situation to reach agreement on what the overall purpose of the board is and what the issues are. Bill Graham has met with us. He has offered to meet with any of the constituencies again face-to-face. And I would urge any of you, I think people continue to have questions for him, and I think it would be good to take the opportunity to talk with him directly. He's a fairly quiet guy, but he is very active in the three board committees that he is on. It's not something that we all do, read board committee minutes all the time, but if you are interested in more conversation with him, your officers can reach out directly and find an individual time for you.
If I could just add just a kind of further complicating factor, is that the ICANN bylaws require that we notify the ICANN secretary of who our candidate will be 6 months before the end of the annual meeting, which means that we basically are looking at, I think it's April 16th or something, by which we have to have this election conducted and a candidate. So that obviously is not making things any easier.
All right, so thank you for that. We are now joined by the ESSAC, and we are going to hear from them. As I mentioned, then we'll be joined by Larry Strickling, and then we'll have some time to finalize our preparations before we move into meeting with the board. So thank you so much, Patrick. Over to you.
Thank you very much. I'm always impressed by people that are keeping the timeline. So thank you very much for that, because we're one of the groups that today are running around from meeting to meeting, like between the rooms. So thank you very much. Patrick Fältström, chair of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. I join you here together with Jim Galvin, my vice chair. And then I also have a number of ESSAC members that are also came with me into the room. Can the ESSAC members please stand up so you see who they are? And the reason why I want them to stand up is because if it is the case you have follow-up questions, just catch any of them, and thank you very much. And you can ask follow-up questions. On the agenda, you have got all the slides, I hope. Otherwise, you can distribute them. And so this is the agenda for today. I can give an overview of our activities. Then we have prepared a presentation of the two latest reports, SAC 64 and 65, and then question and answers. Question to this group is whether you want us to go through all of this or whether we should move into question and answer quicker. We can, for example, concentrate on one of the two reports, do a quick overview, and then concentrate on one of the two reports. That is what I would suggest.
I think a quick overview would make sense for this group.
So let's start with a quick overview, and then we'll see where we end up. And let's see, and we have until 10:15. So ESSAC was initiated in 2001 and began operation 2002. It provides guidance to ICANN board and the ICANN community and the internet community as a whole. What is important is what we have here on the chart as charter. And this is something that specifically in these days I think it's important to remember. It is to advise the ICANN community and board on matters related to the security and integrity of the Internet's naming and address allocation systems. We are currently 40 members appointed to the ICANN board for 3-year terms. We are, because of that, we are reviewing about a third of the members each year, and we're just going into a start of a review cycle. The current activities include the membership committee that is doing the review. We are working on a DNSSEC workshop that we have every Wednesday, and encourage all of you to send the people in your organizations that are interested in DNSSEC to this workshop, and also for future ICANN meetings that you submit proposals to this workshop, which is gaining popularity in the ICANN community. We have a work party on identifier abuse metrics. We have, since quite a number of years now, explicit outreach to law enforcement and cooperate with law enforcement interaction with the ICANN community. We will this year, just like previous years, host a workshop at the Internet Governance Forum. And we just started a work party on the public suffix lists, where I emphasize that this is in plural. We also just launched a work party on security and stability implications with the globalization of ICANN. We don't have the exact wording here on the name of the work party, and that is because the work party itself will actually form in a few hours, so we don't really have the exact wording of that work party, but we do have one that is looking at this IANA-related issues. The publications, the latest publications by category, if we look at them, we of course have been looking quite a lot on DNS security lately, but also we have been also sort of moved into various different abuse scenarios. We have since long term back had our eyes on what's happening regarding internationalization, regarding IDNs. This specific report on SAC 60 that you see on the slides is also having some comments on Trademark Clearinghouse, which might be interested to this group. We also are following the work on WHOIS, and we are very happy to say that the current events regarding WHOIS in the ICANN community is actually following an architecture of how to attack the sort of WHOIS problem that we took a step back in ASAC and wrote a report and said, this is how we think the community should attack the WHOIS issues, otherwise we have to wait until the cows come home. We're very happy to see that things are now moving forward, and we think that's moving well. So with that, we have. Let me start by asking if anyone have any questions on ESSAC, any engineer questions.
How do you actually determine your priorities in terms of what you'll be researching and advising on next?
We do have, at least once a year, we do ask the ESSAC members to do an outreach in their individual capacity in whatever kind of sort of footprint they have as individuals for what they believe are important reports on a 1 to 2 year period. Because it takes us between 3 months and a year to produce a report. So the way we work, we cannot really pick up, something happened yesterday, let's do something. That's incredibly hard for us. So we ask people to please come with what do you think is important, what could actually help a year from now. From that, we have a list, and we have a discussion in ESSAC on what we believe the priorities are. That is driven by input from various sources. Now, given that we are an advisory committee, there are, of course, other things which immediately get high priority. And for example, if we get a question from the board, which we explicitly advise it to, then we make sure that we are responding to that. The more direct the questions are from other SO and ACs, for example, we got some direct questions from the government advisory committee. That was so easy to respond to that question, which means that we also prioritized that because that was pretty easy. So the prioritization, we do sort of a broad prioritization once a year, but then we say that we can have approximately 6 work items in parallel. That's the amount of resources we have. So every time something closes, then we go back to our list of priorities and say, should we pick the top one or should we pick something, or is there a reason to pick something else? Thank you. Please.
Hi, Jonathan Zook from ACT. I was wondering, with a number of reviews, coming up under the affirmation of commitments in the next year, 18 months from now, whether or not some of the things in your priority list might be potential inputs into those reviews. I know one of the ones that I'm working on right now is the review on consumer competition, trust, and choice. And in the trust area, there certainly seem to be a lot of areas where a well-timed report would be very helpful to a review team that would have to convene in that time frame.
The work we're doing are quite often two different kinds of report. One kind of report is that we are reviewing material that is produced by someone else, basically like sending in something during the comment period or during the reply period during an open consultation. The other thing we're doing is that we're responding to specific questions, and that question could either be issued by ourselves or by some other constituency. I must admit that we are pretty bad at sort of getting our acts together if it is the case that we just see something that might actually happen. So if I'm happy to talk more with you about what we more specifically can do, because the goal of our reports more and more ends up being recommendations to someone to do something, okay? And if the question or the activity that we're doing cannot result in recommendation to someone, we have seen that those reports were just describing something doesn't get a lot of traction. It's much better if we actually can find some kind of sort of actionable result of the work we are doing. But I'm happy to talk more with you about this.
Christina?
Thanks. Patrick, I hate to take us off track a little bit, but I think it's a question that folks here would appreciate your answer to. You and I are both invited to the CEO calls that Fadi has. And in the February call, you made a couple statements that I was hoping we could follow up on, one of which was that we have new GTLDs that are so broken technically that I think various clauses that say Ibero could be invoked has been matched, and that the issues SSAC has seen on the broken trademark clearinghouse have not yet been acted on at all. Yeah. And I was hoping that you could provide a little bit more clarity as to, have those issues been addressed? And going forward, is there a formal or perhaps informal role for SSAC to be providing input on some of these new GTLD technical issues as the rollout continues? And is there anything that we as a commercial stakeholder group could do to support that effort?
Yeah. First of all, the comments I made was, as you said, on one of the SO and AC like share calls. And I think it is important for us to be able to have these calls and be able to make statements on the experience that we have in the various groups. To some degree, the quote of what I said, first of all, was spread sort of out of context, which meant that there was a lot of paddling backwards for all of us on the call, and we probably got all different kind of rumors based on that. So thank you for being able to clarify this. So for the first thing, I appreciate having only one discussion in this room. So first of all, regarding the brokenness, it is the fact that there are TLDs in the new GTLD round, which are live in the root zone, which do not follow the requirements laid out in the PDT. And that is something that anyone can see, and we don't really need any SSAC action on this, because SSAC has nothing to do with this. This is something that anyone can see by just looking at the TLDs and looking at the requirements in the applicant guidebook and the PDT tests. The reason why I pointed it out was not as an SSAC chair, is that from the technical community, there is a discussion going on and people are looking at these TLDs. And of course, individuals are asking themselves, what is the role of the compliance team, how it is going on. And just because I saw the discussions going on and there started to become some concern in the technical community whether what the role actually is of compliance team, when, how long should we wait before the compliance team should act. And in reality, if it is the case that those requirements are not fulfilled, then the rules are that EBRO can actually be activated after a TLD has been broken for 6 hours. The question is then, how do you count 6 hours? What do you mean by broken? Is the same thing as listed in PDT? And that's why I said a word that actually was lost in the quote, and that is EBRO could be or can be, okay? Because according to the letter, EBRO can be but doesn't have to be, okay? And this ends up being a process issue, which I felt as the chair of one of the SO and ACs that also have knowledge of what's going on within my community that I represent, might end up being a process issue that I wanted to make the other SO and AC chairs aware of. That's a very big difference from having the ESSAC making a statement based on a conclusion, based on some kind of like technical evaluation. So the point I made was about a potential attack against ICANN process, not the actual fundamental issue that I brought up. It was just an example. Okay, so that was number one. Number two, Trademark Clearinghouse. Since that phone call, actually about 2 weeks ago, we have got a report back to ESSAC saying that there is now a proposal that is worked on regarding Trademark Clearinghouse, which do resolve our issues. Okay. That said, it is under deliberation, and of course we will evaluate when it is the case that the deliberations on the changes are done, whether it actually matches what. But I can say that now we actually do see signs that not only that work is ongoing, which I said on the call, it's actually we see even more positive result of what is happening. So I would say there are positive things happening there.
Appreciate the clarification. Thank you very much. In terms of the process point with regard to EBRO, is that something that we can help with? Is that something that you see a role for the CSG perhaps in monitoring compliance, coordinating with ESSAC? You know, to the extent that there is, I think that it's probably safe to say that everyone would be happy to do that.
I have no idea. And this is one of the reasons why I brought it up on the calls between the SO and AC chairs to discuss this.
Sorry, Ron, and then I think Steve Metallitz, who is on the line, has a call. And Rick.
Thank you very much, Patrick. I wonder if you could just come back to the comments you made about that there's ESSAC is voicing concern about compliance lags with regard to new TLDs that have been added to the route, and there's issues.
No, there. I did not say that.
I want to understand that. Thank you.
I said that I pointed out to the other SO and AC chairs that there might be a process issue here. Okay.
But these are new GTLDs that are being added into the route now?
That is correct.
And they're not, there's issues that would be technical issues that would cause a problem in terms of stability?
That might, because this is not black and white, and specifically not the way the PDT and the applicant guidebook is written. There is nothing black and white in there, and that's why it's very important that these kind of discussion got a process does not turn into black and white discussions.
Thank you very much.
Oh, sorry. Maybe people don't know what PDT means. That is the pre-delegation testing that is part of the acceptance of the application and later deployment of the TLD.
Steve Metallitz, then Rick, and then Mikey. And then we should definitely let Patrick continue on because he's only here with us for another less than 20 minutes.
And you have an important guest.
Yes. So, I'm sorry. Steve?
Okay.
Yeah, this is Steve Metallitz. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. My question to Patrick was about ESSAC advisories. Are these posted for public comment? And if not, is there an alternative way to either raise questions about what's in the advisory or to provide reactions to the advisory?
Thank you for that question. First of all, no, they are not open for public comment. And the reason for that is that the way our advisories work is that we produce our advisories ourselves, and then it's up to the community to decide whether the advice is something that you should reference or not. And what is then up to public comment is, for example, if it is the case that the board or ICANN staff, for example, pick up our advice, then what their actions that they want to do based on our advice, that is up for public comment. So the public comment and feedback on advice is sort of one step after what we have done. The next part of your question is, how do you come with feedback to us? Well, one way is, for example, to ask questions at these meetings or to come to our open meeting, which this week is Thursday morning, 8 a.m. Hooray, bring coffee. Where we are discussing the work parties and what we are doing, where we can have discussions. This is also one of the reasons why I bring all the ESSAC members to this room and why I present to you what we're currently working on, because I want to have more discussions with others on these specific topics. Now, the only thing that in reality, because of this, is really done in a closed room for ESSAC is when we write out, when we finalize the actual recommendations. Because that is something that, as you might understand, for various security reasons, are something that we absolutely must do in a closed room. So if you don't like what we write in our recommendations, do not reference it. Okay? It gives you an ability to completely ignore what we're saying, or even to say these guys are nuts. Thank you.
Rick, then Mikey. Well, actually, let Mikey go since Rick can come up. So, go ahead, Mikey.
Hi, it's Mikey O'Connor. I just want to do a plug for the little email list that I started in my typical haphazard way that's called GNSO-SSR. And I want to thank Patrick and the other members of the ESSAC for joining that list. It's off to a bit of a start. It's not really settled yet what we're going to talk about or how. But, you know, to Christina's point and Steve's point and stuff, the goal of that list is simply to open a channel for conversation, communication, you know, the sort of informal sidebar about this topic. And if anybody would like to join and can't dredge up the notice, we sent out a notice a month or so ago. Please let me know or get a hold of your respective executorial type people and we'll get you on the list. And I just wanted to say thanks to the ESSAC for being right in there.
Yeah, let me emphasize what Mikey said. Even if you see, for example, that I might not speak up so often on that list, let me tell you that I read every single message there. So when you are discussing between it, even though the discussion is only between you, we see that. And that's a very good input. So please use that list.
Rick Wesson speaking. I just wanted to drill into a little comment that Christina made on that should the business constituency try and provide more oversight about the new domains, new processes, and provide that information back to the SAC. And I think that compliance is really the best place to send that kind of data. And there's so many new capabilities that compliance has with the new GTLD program that I think that that's really the best place that this kind of stuff go. Thanks.
It is even the case. Let me just say that very explicitly. ESSAC is absolutely not part of the evaluation or anything of the new TLDs. We are not part of any of the PDPs, and the only comments we are making, just because it takes us between 3 months and a year to write a report, the only thing we are commenting on is, for example, the overall architecture, whether it's whether we think it's stable enough. We have got quite a lot of questions the last few weeks on, for example, variants and the label generation rules and the integration panels, and this whether we would like to evaluate the result of the label generation rules for variants. And we are saying that, and we don't want to, because we're not part of the process of that evaluation. On the other hand, we have already made a statement that the process itself, from ESSAC perspective, looks sound as long as the evaluation of whatever is produced in that process is actually results in decisions by the integration panel. So we have pointed out explicitly that it's the integration panel which is key, which makes that process robust and stable. That is the kind of evaluation we are doing of a process that is sort of invented inside ICANN. And after we trust the process, we see that is how the process is implemented, then the process itself should continue to run. And as Rick said, it's up to the other processes regarding potential appeal, whether that exists, compliance team, etc., etc. So we are sort of more close to SSR and those kind of reviews that is happening more than where the compliance team is, if you see what I mean regarding being close or far away from actual operations within ICANN. So we are actually further away from operations of ICANN than what people think.
Tony?
Thanks. Sir Tony Holmes. Patrick, as you're aware from earlier conversations, one of the big concerns ISPs and others have had is over name collisions. And since then, events have moved on. We've had the JIS report come out. Would you see it as part of ESSAC's potential role to do a retake of the measures that have been put forward in the recommendations and how that's changed the overall landscape?
At the moment, we have our meeting with ESSAC where we're going to discuss, among other things, this issue this afternoon. So I cannot. It might be the case that what I'm not going to say is what the current status is. That might change. First of all, regarding collisions, I encourage you to read SAC 64, which goes a little bit deeper into the issue from a technical point of view and explains what the actual issues are that we have been talking about before. Regarding the JAS report, in general, when ESSAC has made a recommendation to the board or to ICANN staff to work on something that results on a study being made, like in this case with JAS, we in ESSAC, we do believe that work is done based on the report from us, so it would be sort of awkward if we are directly commenting on the report itself, because we are now sort of neutral on the report. On the other hand, if it is the case that the study itself is doing something which is sort of shows that whoever did the whoever is doing the report did not understand which is a difference from disagree with, did not understand what we wrote, in that case we would have said something. Otherwise, we are looking more at what is coming in during the public comment period, and if there are mistakes or misunderstandings, we are looking into filing replies. We think that is where our role is, because we, just like everyone else, is sort of, we trust the process ICANN have, and in this case, we issued a report where we recommended ICANN to do a study. They are doing the study, it's an open consultation period, and then there is a reply mechanism, and that's it. So we're done?
Yeah.
No, we're out of time.
You have till 10:25.
Okay. Well, I'm happy. I can actually give you another, 10 minutes, so that's fine. I'm sorry, misunderstanding. I thought I had to run out at 10:15, so 10 more minutes.
You have seven minutes if you can spare it.
7:31. Let's go. So just because you mentioned search list and the namespace collisions, let me go through this. So, and yes, my name is there because I actually led this work party. So what we did was that we looked at how current operating systems and application process search lists. We highlight some security and stability implications with some search list behaviors, and we propose a straw man on how to improve search list processing. Now, when we are writing reports, we have over time discovered that if we write reports where the words are targeted to the whole community, they are not so popular. if the words we choose are targeted towards the community that we are also sending recommendations to, which means that then they are much more popular. This means that when we write something which is towards governments, it's one kind of language. These reports are to the technical community. So I presented this to ALAC, and they just like, poof, what are you talking about? So this is one of the reports which are quite technical, so don't be nervous. But the people that we are targeted at, we think they understand or they should understand this. So what is search list processing? That is a feature that allows a user to enter partial name in an application, and there are actually other domain names which are looked up. So, for example, if you have a search list that consists of some domain 1.com and some domain 2.com, and the end user types in system in the browser, the operating system would actually look up system.somedomain1.com and then system.somedomain2.com and then system in some order. Not that order, okay? That's one of the problems. So this slide, of course, you cannot read it on here, but I can read it because I have it much closer. What we have seen is that the various ways search lists are applied is everything from not being applied at all to have the domain name plus what's in the search list plus www before the domain name being added. So, and you have all of these different variants in unspecified order happening. So, yes, we see in ESSAC the automatic addition by www in front of whatever people type in the browser is a security and stability issue. Okay? So the first issue is that we have all of these non-standardized ways for application operating systems to work. So what does then happen? Because of this, you have the ability to get both query leakage and, because of that, privacy issues. You might also have privacy issues by having people registering domain names that previously didn't exist, that got matched because of the search list issue, and then you will have the application start to send email to a host, which means that the content of the email or cookies or whatever is actually sent to someone that was not intended to get that information. If we then look at the digital data, if we look at the number of queries for various domain names, we see that home and corp to the far left are many, many more queries for to the root zone than the others. We also have a logarithmic y-axis. Depending on how much you are used to these kind of things, you might want to look at the linear y-axis or logarithmic y-axis, depending on what you would like to see. So anyway, so we see that there is quite a lot of queries for specifically home and corp, and we believe that there is a connection between that and search list processing. Now, this one I actually would like. Let's see if I can increase the size here.
Yep.
There. So on this one, we see what's happening today. A user types in www.corp, and the resolver says there is no domain name www.corp. What then happens is that the operating system will query for www.corp.corp.example.com, and the DNS will say there is no www.corp.example.com. Then there will be a query in step 5 for www.corp.chicago.example.com, and it will say, I'm sorry, there is no such domain name. And then it will try www.corp.example.com, and it will get back an A record, which is 192.0.2.10. Now, you see that this is what's happening today. This relies on getting back what is called technically NX domain, which is domain name does not exist in step 2. Now, if it is the case that corp is delegated and someone allocates a second level domain, which is www, then you will no longer get back NX domain as a result of this query. You will get an IP address, and the application will continue just like what happened on step 8. And we see that as something which is not a good thing. So we have a proposal for how to remedy this, and don't have to go into the details on this. So we basically recommend ICANN SOACs, the IETF, to actually consider the proposed behavior, because one of the big problems, as I said, the first finding, is that application and operating systems behave differently, and we'd need to have harmonization there. And this includes vendors of hardware, software, and the whole nine yards, everything. That's an easy task. So what we are then recommending because of this is that in one way we recommend ICANN staff to work with DNS community and update the RFCs to include this new algorithm.
Unfortunately, I think we're just at about time, and we really do need to bring in Larry Strickling. Would it be okay if people had questions? How can they have them answered?
The easiest way is to stop one of us in ESSAC in the corridors and talk with us. And I see all the people that have questions. I know that they know who we are in ESSAC, but the others should also reach out if they have questions. So with that, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Patrick. Very, very much appreciated.
So while Alyssa has gone away and thus the meeting is totally out of control, I was actually going to speak to the younger folks for your model board meeting. I've forgotten the name of your organization. Net Missionaries, yeah? So this issue that Patrick just described is exactly like the issue that you're working on. In the issue you are working on, the problem is how do we get all of those software environments changed to accommodate the new TLDs, universal acceptance. In this situation, the question is how do we get all those software environments changed so that they don't do this bad thing that Patrick just described? So when you are in your board meeting, one of the things to think about is how do we get the world to know, you know, this is a very large group of people that need to be identified and informed about these technical issues, either the issue that you're working on, universal acceptance, or this one, which is in a way very similar. It means that software packages have to be changed, so the people who need to change the packages need to be told, and they need to be motivated because there may not be money in their budget to do it. And now that Alyssa is back and regained her meeting, I will shut up.
Thanks, Mikey. So we are very honored to have both Fiona and Larry Strickling here to answer questions. So first of all, I want to say thank you very much to both of you for agreeing to come. I know it was very last minute, but I think that there are, you know, many members of the commercial stakeholders group who are very interested in asking questions and are probably looking to get some further clarification. So I really appreciate your flexibility. And I'm not sure if you want to say a few opening words, but I know that members do have questions.
So, well, let me ask a question to start. We just came from CCNSO, and I came in and sat down. You know, I've been talking about this for the last 3 days here. I assume we can just go straight to questions. And they said no. But I'm prepared to go straight to questions if people feel they have a good handle on exactly what we announced in the paper we announced, and we can get right to busting some myths here if that's what people would like to do.
I think that is the case. Mikey.
Thanks for all you're doing. Fantastic. I had a question out of the first session with Fadi. I am just as clueless about this as I was yesterday when I stood at the mic. And so in terms of the content, I've got nothing to ask about. But in terms of the process, one of the things that I think I misunderstood and I wanted to check with you all is that when Fadi had Jonathan and all the other leaders of the, you know, Patrick Kane, he had a whole bunch of people up there. I thought I heard him say something along the lines of this is sort of an organizing committee or a steering committee. But when I talked to some of the folks afterwards, they set me straight and said, no, not really. We were just there to sort of describe what our organizations do. And if that's right, then let me follow up real quick with a comment, which is, It would be, I think, fantastic if by the end of this week we had some group of people that was identified to sort of carry the ball. Not necessarily perfect, not necessarily exactly right, but the problem that we had in Buenos Aires, as I'm sure you know, is that we sort of threw all the cards in the air and they all kind of floated down on the floor, and then it took us a while to pick cards up and make a hand out of it. And so if we could get the some sort of core group organized right out of the chute, is there any planning along those lines going on?
Well, first off, we think our role at this point is to basically step aside and let the multi-stakeholder process take hold and move forward. And frankly, I was quite pleased by what I saw yesterday in the meetings in terms of the engagement. We did say in our statement it was very important that this not be just an ICANN effort, that it needed to engage the IETF, the IAB Internet Society, the other groups. And so I think part of what you saw with the arrangement yesterday morning was ICANN's response to that by bringing representatives of those groups up on stage. And then at the same time, since those groups don't include the CC community and the GNSO community, there were representatives that were also up on stage, I assume, to make it clear that as inclusive as possible. Although even with that, I think Sebastian stood up and said, well, where are the end users? So I guess you can never put enough up there. But so I think that was good. And we do want to see a process emerge out of this that engages all people that are interested in it, that's transparent. Whether a steering committee evolves out of this or not is not for us to say. I do think that that there really are two sets of issues here that are teed up by our announcement. One is the very specific one of how do the IANA functions work and defining the U.S. role in that. And I do think, personally, although we would never dictate this, that it might make sense to have that specific question answered by people largely out of the customer base of IANA, because they're the ones that at the end of the day have to be satisfied with this. That's not our decision. That's a community decision. So that might make sense. But there's also the other issue that's clearly been teed up by this, and everyone recognizes it, and many of you have spoken eloquently about this since we got here on Friday, and that's the symbolic role that we've played, whether it's providing confidence to the community that that the system's going to work right, if the extent that people think that we were able to discipline ICANN by virtue of having, I know that's Steve's made that point quite directly throughout the weekend. And so that's an important topic for the community to work through as well. And that was, I think, teed up in the second session yesterday. From our perspective, we think the issues are interrelated. We certainly think it's appropriate for the community to take on both issues. I think all we would like to see is that it be organized as efficiently as possible so that we get a good outcome at the end and that we get a consensus outcome that the community can buy into.
Phil, then Steve. I'm sorry. Christian.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for being here. My question, and this is spurred by some of the comments, particularly yesterday afternoon, it's clear from the NTIA press release and what you've said since you've got here, it's clear what the substance of the whatever's produced by this process is just getting started here. It needs to meet the four principles that you've set forth in the press release, and it can't cross the two red lines of government control or international type organization. But on the process, and I know there are shades of gray here, is the U.S. looking for a final proposal that ICANN produces after listening to the stakeholders, or a proposal that the stakeholders have created and in essence presented to ICANN? And I know there are shades of gray in there, but and I have no idea how this process is actually going to work since we're just starting, but just wanted to get your feelings on that.
So we're looking for a consensus proposal developed through an open and transparent process that has attracted the support of the community. That's what we're looking for. I don't know what the right process is to get to that, but any process that prevents that from happening won't be a good process.
Steve, then Christian.
Steve Delbianco, NetChoice. Larry, we too believe that the discipline leverage aspect and the actual functions are, use the word interrelated. I personally have used the word that there's a lot of linkage there, but there's a good bit of reluctance from ICANN management to do the linkage. In the morning session on IANA transition, when a few of us talked about the accountability, discipline, predictability, we were told, oh, no, no, that comes in the afternoon. So we dutifully got in line in the afternoon, and the afternoon panel ended up being mostly about ATRT and the affirmation of commitments, our favorite document. So we will do our best to maintain the linkage there, but we, the thing that the statement you made to us about you see them as interrelated, I would encourage you to make that statement in every opportunity to ICANN board and management so they understand it too. It's not just us making stuff up. There is inherent linkage, and we watched you exhibit it in 2012 by canceling the RFP on IANA. It was a brilliant move. So my question for you would be, you used in your four principles the word multi-stakeholder, and I would just ask, is that shorthand for the longer expression of a bottom-up, consensus-based multi-stakeholder? Because a top-down, high-level expert panel is also a multi-stakeholder, but it isn't bottom-up and consensus. And so is it really that full mouthful of bottom-up, consensus-based multi-stakeholder?
Yes, period. But again, the question of how you organize to make that happen, I think, is on the table for the community to decide. And I think just to repeat what I said a few minutes ago, at the end of the day, there has to be a proposal that is a consensus community proposal. And I think that in order to get that, and when you look at the front end of that, you need to be as inclusive as possible at the front end to do that. Now, as always, when you're starting with just the large question and you're trying to scope it and you're trying to, in effect, staff it, there's going to be a lot of churn in terms of how do you now narrow this down to a workable process that that people will have faith in and will feel that they've been able to have input into. And I'm not prejudging what that looks like, which is why I'm not saying that, you know, to Mikey's point, the idea of a steering committee or some committee to making sure all aspects of the community are represented and kind of having the responsibility to actually put some words on paper that the community can react to. I express no opinion as to whether that's good or bad, but it does seem that that's one way to approach this that gets you past the total chaos stage. But we expect something that the full community beyond ICANN, the full internet community, is going to be able to endorse. People have been asking me, well, what's your criteria going to be at the end? It's like there's you're all taking a test, but nobody knows what the answers are or what the questions are. And I keep trying to tell people that's not what's going on here. We've laid out, you know, four corners to frame the discussion with the conditions. And what I always answer to people is, you bring us back a consensus proposal that's been developed through an open and transparent process that the community buys into, and I think the rest of it will take care of itself, because we know that all of these issues are well represented among all of you and all of your counterparts here and in the community globally. And the question is bringing all that to the table in an efficient way to coming up with a consensus view.
Sometimes when we try to respect a GAC request for policy development, we'll come back and ask for clarifications of what they may have meant by their four principles. And we're usually told, go read the principles. But in this case, if 6 months in, if we have a couple of straw man plans ready to go, I wonder if your office would respond. We would send a straw man plan into you and ask, hey, how close is this to the principles and the red lines that you laid out? Would you be willing to consider giving us interim evaluations along the way?
I don't know who you or they is. Again, we want a consensus view. So you're saying if the community has a consensus proposal and...
It would be alternative. Suppose we had a plan A and a plan B.
Well, we're not here to tip the scale in favor of one set of stakeholders, if that's the question. So that I don't think we would participate in. But
about tipping the scale, it's about learning whether we're on the right track, Larry.
Consensus, open, transparent. I don't know what the...
Christian?
Well, just to push that a little further, could you envision an eventuality where the community had a transparent, consensus-driven process, and it didn't bring forward a result that met your conditions for you to say, not good enough, go back to the drawing table?
Yeah, if you throw in the towel and say, let's give it to the ITU.
Christina?
I'm Christina Rosette for the transcript. Thank you very much, Larry and Fiona, for being here. I have a timeline question and I have a message question. Clearly, we're looking at a current contract that expires September 30, 2015. Some of the draft timelines that I've seen from ICANN are extraordinarily aggressive in terms of when a proposal, or at least an initial proposal, would need to be developed. From your perspective, to the extent that you have kind of a general date that you think would need to be met in order to then meet that September 30, 2015 deadline, is there such a date that you could share with us so that we have a sense of, notwithstanding what ICANN is saying is the timeline, here is really kind of the drop-dead timeline? And I ask that in part because the community is already, especially with NetMundial, extraordinarily stretched right now. So that would be helpful to know.
So a couple of comments on that. One is there's no hard and fast deadline. We simply stated a fact, which is that the current contract expires on September 30th, 2015. And I think it's always helpful to have a date in mind when you're trying to plan to getting something done as opposed to just letting it drift on and on. If the community doesn't present a proposal to us in time to be implemented by that date, there's no cliff. We have the ability to extend the contract for up to 4 more years in 2 two-year options that we have. And so first and foremost in our mind is preserving security and stability. We'll just exercise an option and keep going, and the community can continue to work on this. So nobody should feel that there's a cliff in front of us or that we are trying to put pressure on the community to arrive at anything other than the most optimal result the community can arrive at. In terms of your question, you know, backing up from that date, if, you know, when does the community really have to have a plan in order to allow the date? I can't even begin to predict on that because a lot of it would depend on what the proposal is. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the community were basically to say, you know what, we think there's no need for anything to replace what you actually do in the passing of root zone changes and updates, that it could go machine to machine with adequate transparency so that everybody can see what's going on, and that that aspect of it, the technical aspect of it, really doesn't require anything new. I think people would want to make sure that's been tested out, and obviously there might be additional programming that has to be done to provide the transparency people are looking for. But, you know, that might be something that could be implemented fairly quickly. If there's going to be some new organization that requires some transfer of engagement with us, you know, then you may have different startup time frames. So I don't think it's possible to say in order to meet that date, your work has to be done by date X. I think it's too dependent on what the community comes up with.
Thank you.
Jonathan Zuck, then Tony Harris, and that's probably all we'll have time for. Yeah, I'm sorry. We had a question over here. There was Marilyn, Ron, but unfortunately... yes, Olivia, but unfortunately, we only have you for another 3 minutes. So, Jonathan?
Yes, hi, Jonathan Zuck from ACT. Thanks for coming to speak with us. I guess I want to ask a little bit of a philosophical question. In some ways, it's inspired with your exchange with Steve. But something Fadi said during his introduction to this yesterday struck me that as interesting, in which he said, the first thing we need to do is look at the architectures and the systems that currently exist, and there may not be any need for anything new. And then you just said something about different types of proposals that might lead to different timeframes for execution. And all that leads me to wonder if what you does you your primary criteria for the plan is the process with which it was created is. Do you envision a possible scenario in which no plan is necessary, that all the function of NTIA has, in fact, by now been replicated and is just duplicative, and is it just a confidence-building exercise for the entire Internet community to say that in fact, nothing new needs to be done in order for this transition to take place? Do you see that possibility, or do you envision that some reforms are, in fact, necessary to facilitate a transition?
in terms of the specific role we play in on the updating of the root zone file? I mean, if you're focused on that, that does strike me as perhaps primarily a technical question. And on that one, I think it really does come back to, first and foremost, what do the customers of the, of that effort want to see? And I don't know to what extent they might be comfortable with that as an outcome or not. But I guess we're ruling in nothing and we're ruling out nothing in that regard other than through the criteria that we've already expressed. But I know that in some, I will say this, sometimes some people, not necessarily here, but I've seen it in the press, keep referring to transferring to a new organization, transferring the U.S. role to a new organization. We've never said that. We've never made that a condition of what has to happen here. We want to leave it up to the community to figure that out. So there's no expectation one way or the other as to whether this requires, you know, some new body to come in and take a look at every root zone request as it passes through and say yay or nay to it based on some, you know, checklist that they might have, which is basically what we do now.
I guess I'm talking more about the awarding of the IANA contract itself. I mean, the discipline-oriented thing. I mean, one proposal could be just extend the term of that to be 100 years. So that, I mean, that would literally take almost no work whatsoever by anyone. But that, once that contract's awarded, it's awarded for 100 years. And is that an acceptable proposal?
And leave us in the role we have today.
Well, I mean, I guess I didn't mean to make that point as much as eliminate the contract. Then there's no longer a contract. It's simply the functions are simply permanently assigned to ICANN. Is that a sufficient plan in your mind, or do you believe that there is some sort, I don't mean necessarily an other entity or anything like that, but do you believe something needs to be done, or is it really just a question, potentially, of everyone getting their mind around the fact that nothing needs to be done?
Again, I rule nothing in, I rule nothing out. I say consensus developed through an open and transparent and inclusive process so that all the issues have been dealt with.
Well, thank you so much.
We need to give France a chance here.
Okay.
Olivia, get a question?
Yeah.
Commitment, because you were at the origin of the concept of affirmation of commitment, and I see that some people or some group are mentioning the use of affirmation of commitment, a web of affirmation of commitment, even in the strategic report by Vinserv, to take place and to replace it. Those new affirmation of commitment between ICANN and all technical partners like the registries. So as the father of the concept, I wanted to have your opinion.
Actually, I think Fiona probably deserves more of the credit for the intellectual product that he emerged as the affirmation than I do. But I will say this, that I think it's emblematic of a larger question that really ought to be addressed. And people are using the affirmation because it's a tangible document and it lets people wrestle with the concept. But that is, when you have an organization of this type created that doesn't have a membership, it doesn't have shareholders, it does have contracting parties, but what it really comes down to is how do you define an enforceable fiduciary duty from that organization and to whom is it extended? That, I think, is the question everyone is wrestling with when they talk about getting more people to sign the affirmation of commitments. But then you get into this metaphysical, existential debate of having them sign it with every global internet stakeholder worldwide. And, of course, that's not practical. So, but I think that's the larger question here. To make more sense to start framing this rather than talking about internal and external accountability measures or extending the affirmation of commitments, that first and foremost, what you're looking for is to whom does ICANN, is it accountable in terms of its various activities, and how do you enforce those undertakings that it's making to those people to whom it owes a duty? That's a very broad question. I don't purport to have the answer to it, but Olivia, you know from our experience on ATRT1 that was always in the background, and it continued to be in the background as an issue on ATRT2. And it's something that I think as the organization continues to evolve, it's the one we all need to get our heads around.
So so much for joining us. And I apologize to Tony and Marilyn that we were not able to get to your questions. But as you know, we do have to prepare for the board. So again, thank you, Fiona and Larry. We really appreciate your time. Is there a way that if there are any questions that they might be asked?
Sure. So yeah, we're around here all day today. Good luck finding us because we'll be in sessions like this with groups. But I think most people know our email addresses. And, yeah, feel free to get in touch with us.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we have just a little bit of time now to prepare before we walk over to meet with the ICANN board. We have sort of draft outline, and hopefully, I know that this was sent into the BC, and I hope that it was, I believe it was also sent out to the IPC. I don't know if it went out to the ISP members. Okay, so ISP members, this might be the first time that you're seeing this. But essentially, this is based on, I'll get you in just a second, Sue. This is based on our conversation that we had on Sunday. We talked about addressing two main issues. One was around, you know, all the sort of outstanding issues around the multi-stakeholder process and practices. And then one was around sort of outstanding new GTLD issues to incorporate compliance issues that we are seeing in particular there. When I do my introduction, I would like to say that we have discussed, and obviously the whole NTIA transition is a very important topic, but that because already so much time is being devoted to it, we wanted to focus on some other issues that may not be getting as much attention. And I want to make sure that as a group we're okay with me framing it that way. Is there anyone that has an issue with me saying that?
It's Marilyn. I think that would be a fantastic way to acknowledge that we're not done with all the topics, but it's already been a lot of exchange, but we're prioritized. And I think it really is important if we do that, because we may then be coming back at the public forum and saying further things after we've had constituency meetings.
Steve.
Steve Del Bianco with the BC. On the first topic up there, when we laid this out together over the weekend, it was my recollection that as a part to just introducing Peter, Phil, and Brian, the very first issue I was going to raise is something that Tony and I took on this weekend, this notion of high-level strategy panels and asking the board to confirm what management told us this weekend with respect to the stature of either the findings or the recommendations that are in those four high-level plans. And if the board will confirm the understanding we got, then I guess we just had a misunderstanding, and I think it would be important for them to do that. So with the understanding of everyone here, is that all your – does everyone agree that I would cover that before I simply pass the ball to Peter?
Christina, I'm fine with that, and I think we had had another conversation offline, and I had said that I was fine with that. But, yes, we should hear from everyone to make sure.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I would actually suggest – frankly, I'm tired of asking the board questions. I think we need to be telling them what we expect and what we want. So, having said that, I would suggest, frankly, that you phrase it. We have been advised by staff that it is our expectation that, period. And if they have a different view, let them raise it. And if they don't take the opportunity, then, frankly, we've kind of set our position.
To indicate that we are relying upon that representation, and that is coloring the way in which we are reacting to the public comment period on these panels.
Tony.
Well, I have a slightly different take on that because I actually want confirmation from them that it's going to happen. And we can go in there and say what our expectation is. It doesn't achieve anything. I want to know that those reports are going to be revised in the right way and what the status of them is, because quite clearly yesterday we pointed out that there are errors in there and they're out in the wild, and if they're not going to revise the report, what's the point in sending comments in anyway? And the inaccuracies just stay. So I would really seek confirmation from them with a commitment that they will be updated.
Perhaps they declare our expectation, reveal a little bit of our concerns, and ask for them to acknowledge that. Yes. Would that be all right?
Yes. Could I just make the point that I really want them to confirm what the next step is without any question.
I just want to follow. It's Marilyn. Kate, I just want to follow on. I'm actually not satisfied, and I did speak to one of the members of the BedSurf panel with all the erroneous charts in it. I spoke to him about the fact that he had to insist on the having the public meeting yesterday. Freezing those documents as they are now, they are out in the wild. That's my language, and trust me, boys and girls, I got the charts sent to me by a government thinking that they were approved ICANN charts. And they right now show ICANN, they have many errors. So I actually think they've got to either be, and I don't see how you disallow them, I think they've got to be corrected and updated. The Beth Novak report has got to be paused, in my view, because there's no time for dealing with this with the work we have to do. But I fully support, we get some kind of a problem because a lot of people are already using those reports.
Steve.
Yeah, in the limited time available in this session, I was going to not get into the content of either their analysis, as bad as it is, and the recommendations, as frightening as they are. We're trying to establish the context that if these reports are simply given to the community, they can't be cited and footnoted in subsequent work as indicating ICANN has declared that this is the way the world works or that ICANN's board has a recommendation. So we can't have these be cited as if they were the product of a bottom-up consensus-driven process. They were simply outside appointed experts dumping some creative ideas and interesting interpretations of the ICANN world that they're not part of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that makes sense to put it forth and get a confirmation of that. And does that meet your requirements? Okay. So then Phil was going to cover sort of the desire of transparency and in particular for open board meetings and anything else that you want to say around that. And then we talked about sort of direct accountability of the CEO and the board. And Brian, are you comfortable with touching on that? And this is not to say that others are not welcome to contribute or shouldn't be speaking, but I did want to make sure that we were able to hear from a variety of different members across the CSG who many of you spoke very eloquently about these topics, frankly, on Sunday. And so I thought it would be great to hear from a wide variety. Jim.
This is Jim Baskin. Who's going to be managing the clock for this session?
You can count on me to move you along.
Okay, because I really don't want us to get behind and have to miss some of the stuff.
Yeah, I think we'll be okay. I will definitely keep a good eye on the If there's one thing about me, I will make sure we stay on time. Peter.
Just on both of those issues, I'm not entirely clear what the issues of accountability are that don't fit in with the desire for transparency or CEO and board accountability?
So when you talked about accountability in our Sunday meeting, you talked about having sort of the different layers of accountability. Who is ICANN accountable to? Who is the CEO? You know what I mean? About all those different layers. And I think that you spoke about that very eloquently.
So just to tee it up for Phil and then Brian to go into the specifics on those two areas?
I think that would make sense. Marilyn.
Just real quick. But I do think in your comments, I think we all agree, but we should test this, that we actually can't spell the word accountability or the word transparency without the word and in between, and noting that they are linked because the board and the staff keep saying we're transparent. I will question that and the delivery of information, but I think the bigger issue is we want to link transparency and accountability.
So moving on to anything else to discuss in this first sort of set of topics.
Does anyone, I guess Phil and Brian, this is Christina, the only thing I would wonder is, do you guys have enough specific examples of some of the issues that we're talking about, or do you need, are you good on those? And do you want to run through them now?
I'd be very quickly what I'm going to, what I thought I would do, and I've just jotted down some notes, so since I'm working on about 5 hours sleep here, because jet lag. Start by pointing out that we were here 3 years ago, and the board had a pretty contentious debate before they authorized a new TLD program, and letting the community see the board members stake out different positions, have a split vote, strengthened the community's acceptance and the credibility of their final decision. And compare that to the fact now that there are, and I'm not arguing for, you know, having pre-choreographed board meetings the way they used to have at the public meetings, but pointing out that particularly the resolution they passed last September authorizing FADI to undertake Montevideo and other activities and keeping it secret from the community is perceived as being mistrustful of the community, is certainly not being transparent in any way. The rationale they gave was not convincing, and there's great concern that ICANN has, while it's a nonprofit corporation, has public policy responsibilities and board decisions on policy need to be made transparently, that the trend in all bodies with those type of responsibilities that have live, real-time webcasts or audio casts, if they're not willing to go that far, they should immediately release full transcripts, and the redaction should only be for certain sensitive personnel and other issues of that type, and that the current minutes are simply unsatisfactory. They just produced the resolutions. There's no description of whether there were dissenting board members, of whether there was a vote, of what considerations they took in when they made these decisions, and that in an organization which is committed to accountability and transparency, transparency has to start at the top, and we've been seeing not more transparency but more opacity over the last 3 years, and there's great concern in the community over that. So that's what I'm planning to say, and if others have thoughts on that, I'd welcome them.
Jonathan, and then we actually do need to go just quickly through the second topic, and then we need to leave and walk over to the padding room because we are scheduled to speak with them at 11:15, and it's 11:02 right now. So, Jonathan.
Yeah, and I guess my overall concern is just that this topic doesn't seem big enough in a way, and doesn't incorporate staff or sort of the accountability institution. But even dealing with the board, I feel like transparency isn't just about webcams and open meetings. It's as much about the board explaining that they took X and such inputs in and made a decision despite them for X and such reasons. And so I think I'm more interested actually in before the board's sort of decisions criterias than I am necessarily in seeing all their deliberations. To me, that's the real source of accountability is gaining some understanding that the inputs they received were in fact received and considered.
Yes.
I'm sure Phil can incorporate those sentiments.
Yeah.
So moving on to topic number two. Yeah, Christina.
I just wanted to the concern that I have on the CEO and board accountability, I think picking up on what Jonathan was saying, to make it broad. But if Peter is going to tee this up by saying to the board, look, the CEO is accountable to you, I think we probably shouldn't focus as much on CEO accountability because we've already said to the board, look, you're responsible for him. I think we can mention the review, but I think we really do focus on board accountability. And I would say that really, you know, let's bring in some of our other issues. Let's bring in the fact that we have no idea, in many cases, what input they get when they're making decisions. We have no idea whether they appreciate the gap between the budget that's been approved and some of the expenditures that have been made. You know, that to me is accountability as well. And I think we need to make it very clear that it is fairly broad, and I think they're failing. I don't know if folks are comfortable saying that, but I think they're failing.
I don't know. We haven't discussed whether or not we would take that particular p- position, but I think we can raise the concerns, and hopefully they can see what that writing means.
I did just want to mention, and I know the BC members, I made them aware through an email yesterday that after I made the statement about concerns over lack of board transparency yesterday morning, Steve Crocker pulled me aside in the afternoon and just said, "You're wrong. We're as transparent as can be. I don't know what you're talking about." So there's a huge disconnect between what we're seeing and feeling and what and the way they feel about things, or at least the chairman feels.
So we actually need to leave in about a minute. So let me just make sure that we are on track with the second topic. I know, Tony, you've got a very good hold of me.
Just a remark on the name collisions. I'm going to get that bit through as quickly as possible, keep it brief. But one of the things I do want to do is hand directly over to Mikey, because he is one of the few people here who's actually got experience of one of the measures that JAS are promoting as a potential solution that we would have expected to have had some different results in. So we don't know whether it's working or whether it isn't. And it's that level of concern about the unknown. Mike is, as I say, one of the few people that's got a hands-on hold on that, so I'm going to hand off.
Sounds good. David.
Just very quickly, because I apologize for having missed the original prep session, but on the issue of compliance, are we going to raise our longstanding position that compliance has not been satisfactory, and as we move into a world of 1,300 new GTLDs, ICANN is really going to have to step up to the plate and enforce compliance, not just on those two issues, but on the new obligations generally speaking?
I'm going to tee that up. There's a very interesting paragraph in the February Compliance Monthly Report. So I'm going to kind of do the intro, lead into that, and then kick over to Tony.
Okay, so I will see you folks over in the padding room.
And we need to stop the recording.
Thank you.
We got them sorted out.
Interesting remark.
There you go.
You know, when Crocker got up there.